Hello and welcome to Seven Stars, Seven Siblings, and One White Tree, a Tolkien podcast by the Wheeler family. So today we're doing something a little different this episode because it's the end of summer and school's starting and several of us are in theatrical productions right now. So that being the case, we weren't able to record a new episode this month. But never fear, we are doing our very first Best of Throwback episode. I know you're all excited. This pretty much means we've put together some clips and sections of previous episodes that we think are worth a rewatch, or re-listen in this case, I suppose. So I hope you enjoy that. We will be back with a brand new episode next time. But before all that begins, Quincy has a few thoughts on the big news in Tolkien circles right now, and that is Amazon releasing the very first official photograph from their billion-dollar TV series. Here's Quincy.
Hello, this is Quincy, and as you prepare to hear the podcast, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Amazon Lord of the Rings on Prime series picture that they released that kind of set the Tolkien community on fire. So, you know, there's been a lot of things rumored about the Amazon series. One thing I wanted to kind of take your mind a little bit easier about is the idea that it's going to be Game of Thrones. Originally, because of the news that there was an intimacy coordinator hired, that became a concern. But, you know, it became clear that intimacy coordinator also sometimes just coordinates kisses, and it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, scenes of intimacy between, you know, sexual partners that they're talking about there. And so I've read some rumors that that's not really going to be an issue in the show. So hopefully that's the case. So let's try to be optimistic and hope the show realizes that the Lord of the Rings is not Game of Thrones. It's got a different mindset and approach, and it's this world of, you know, where we have magic, nobility, and virtue that are extolled, and then the evil that comes against that in the person of Sauron. So in our picture here, we see some unidentified figure looking over this beautiful city, and in the distance we see two trees. Now this causes a lot of controversy because the trees seem to be the two trees that gave light to the world before the First Age. And so we think about that, we say, well, that doesn't really fit with what we know of where the series is headed. The series seems to be headed in the Second Age from what we know of Middle-earth, by which time the trees were already destroyed by Morgoth and the spider Ungoliant. Two trees were Lorelin and Telperion. However, we know that these trees gave us, eventually result in the seed that becomes the White Tree of Gondor, and the White Tree of Gondor being a sapling that was brought from the tree in Numenor, and the tree in Numenor being a tree that was burned and a sacrifice to Morgoth as provoked by Sauron. So there's a lot to those two trees that gave light to the world that relates to the Second Age. So my thought about the picture is it seems pretty clear that we're looking at the city of Tirion, which is a city of the elves, and it's in Valinor. So we're kind of looking at Valinor. We're looking at the land where the Valar and the elves live together. And I would guess that these trees are more of kind of a White Tree of Gondor, kind of a lesser trees of the trees that originally existed before the First Age that now give light in Valinor. So that's not something that Tolkien specifically describes, but I could definitely see how the makers of the show could say, okay, we'll put those two trees that are kind of descendants of those original trees that give light to all of Arda, we'll put those in Valinor as a reminder of where the White Tree of Gondor eventually and the White Tree in Numenor originally came from. So I think that this scene is probably showing us either an elf lord who's kind of looking over the city of Tirion and kind of looking out and seeing Valinor, so it's just a scene like that, Or it may be this is like one of the first soldiers of Numenor who sailed to the Undying Lands and then, of course, were thrown into the sea by Eru Iluvatar, the god of Tolkien's world. And so this is a soldier who's just come over the hill and looking at the city of the elves. So that scene is described by Tolkien. So I think that that's one of the theories that I have, is that it's kind of a combination of those things. The trees are crucial because that's going to be a running thread throughout the series, and something that Sauron runs against, something that relates to the Silmarils. I can't really speculate on who exactly it is in that picture, but it seems to me to be a male, just because of the large neck. It just kind of seems like it's probably a male. Originally, I was kind of buying into the Galadriel theory, which it still could be, but I don't think so. I think it's more likely a male. It's exciting to see the picture, because the idea of the trees being brought into it would indicate to me that the writers of this show understand an important thread that's going to have to be addressed in the Second Age. And it's not just about the rings, about Sauron creating the rings, but it's about the power that different objects and different things in this world contain, whether it's trees or rings or swords. And so it seems to me that the writers of this show maybe understand that from this picture. So I was optimistic about it. Of course, there's a lot of things that we can learn, we can speculate about. Hopefully, eventually we'll get a trailer before too long, probably not till the beginning of the year. But I'm excited to see more and optimistic about the idea that the show might be a good one. I was going to say, I read Lord of the Rings first when I was 9 years old, and then I remember I went and spoiled it to all my sisters because I just couldn't stop talking about it, and I felt kind of bad about that, trying not to do that to my children.
That's the whole reason I read them, is because you guys spoiled me on them. So this is
the part of the podcast where we describe which Palantir each one of us are, right?
What?
I request to not be affiliated with Denethor, as he is the one.
Well, I was going to say, Elizabeth, because I always joke that you have Sauron's personality, that you're clearly the Palantir of Barad-dûr.
I can take that.
The all-seeing eye.
This is
I'll be the creepy burning hands. Stuff. It's fine.
The creepy burning hands. Well, they're not all accounted for.
Brilliant, guys. I'm claiming Denethor's because sometimes I'm unnervingly good at predicting bad outcomes, even though I'm not necessarily, I'm pretty optimistic, but I'm not bad at, sometimes I can see things coming that aren't great.
Just be a better parent than he was. You'll be fine. Denethor.
I feel like I would be Pippin being like, hey, this sounds like a good idea. Let's do it.
No, I feel like I'm Pippin.
I feel like I'm at the Aragorn where I'm like, I'm going to do this for the good of others, but it also made me very sad, kind of depressed.
There's one affiliated with Weathertop, right? That's not any of the other ones that we brought up?
Yes. No. I mean, they're not all listed in Lord of the Rings, but yeah, there's supposed to be one for Weathertop.
Yeah.
I think the probably one important thing we missed is that Noelle forgot to say that she's the actual only Hobbit of the siblings. And,
Okay.
Some of us, Micaiah and I have our own little Hobbits right now, in our children, but Noelle, she's the only Hobbit among us all.
She lives and breathes the Hobbit life.
Let me finish. Am I 4 inches shorter or 6 inches shorter than all the rest of you?
4 inches. Sinara is the next tallest. It's 5'4".
Yeah.
5'3".
Oh, 3 inches. Never mind. I was giving Sinara a generous inch.
Thank you, though.
I might not quite be 5 feet, but we'll ignore that.
And my favorite chapter is Mount Doom. There are so many highlights of Mount Doom that I could lift out, but on basically any copy of Lord of the Rings, the second page of the chapter, there's this great paragraph that says, "But even as hope died in Sam, or seemed to die, it was turned to a new strength. Sam's plain hobbit face grew stern, almost grim, as the will hardened in him, and he felt through all his limbs a thrill, as if he was turning into some creature of stone and steel that neither despair nor weariness nor endless barren miles could subdue." That passage gives me chills down my spine every time I read it. Just thinking about Sam and his good-hearted servant nature, he looks and he says, "There's no way we're getting out of this alive." And then he turns into this creature of steel that nobody can stop. He's going to get his master, Frodo, to the mountain no matter what. And you see in that chapter, like, one of the things I love in that chapter is just how you see Gandalf's plan come into play and Sauron's plans fall apart. Like, Sauron is so, like, self-consumed and consumed with power and plans and strategies. And one of the things, like, if you follow his character in the Silmarillion, he just is all about, like, order and structure, and, like, everything's planned out, and he's got everything in place. And so Gandalf uses all of that against him to say, like, the plan I've got is only an idiot would think this would work, to send two little hobbits into Mordor. And you don't simply walk into Mordor. Like, that's totally true. You don't do that. But Gandalf does it and turns everything I said, because he's got these hobbits that have this good-hearted, love each other, care about each other, put the other person first nature. And when, you know, all hope is lost, they'll just keep going because they've got this unstoppable will. And Gandalf discovered that. He believes in them. And of course, it's Frodo and Sam and their heroism. And then ultimately, even Gollum, Smeagol's got his own level of heroism that comes into play. And we can talk about that, I'm sure we will sometime, about how grace and redemption comes into play there for him. And, you know, I just think you got all this immense trilogy and this book that Tolkien wrote, and you've got this ultimate chapter. And I remember when I first read the books, just racing to get to this point where I'd see what would happen to the ring, what would happen to the quest. And it just pays off in every single way. It pays off, and it's unexpected, yet it wraps everything up perfectly. So for me, it doesn't get much better than Mount Doom. I liked your response of what Gandalf was doing. He's a troublemaker, so he was just making trouble.
Yeah, that's what they call him. I mean,
I was going to say
he was annoying the ones who didn't like him.
Yeah,
he's recruiting more young hobbits in case he needs them in the future.
Hey, children, do you like violence?
Do you like violence?
I wanted to share a little tune to one of the poems that Tolkien wrote. So when I was younger, I liked to kind of dabble in recording and making up my own tunes for some of the songs. And one of my favorite poems is the one that Sam sings in the Tower of Cirith Ungol. It really kind of sums up a lot of the ideas that I love in Return of the King, and how even beyond hope, Sam is someone who can find hope and sees that no matter what's going on. In western lands beneath the sun, the flowers may rise in spring. The trees may bud, the waters run, the merry finches sing. Or there may be 'tis cloudless night and swaying beeches bare. Hello and welcome to the Bilbo-themed portion of the September the 22nd special podcast. Eden and I, Elizabeth, will be sharing some notes of what we think Bilbo would give and write to some other characters in Tolkien's world. As you may remember, after Bilbo leaves, he leaves a lot of items in Bag End for Frodo to hand out to people, and this includes some very passive-aggressive notes. I should have pulled up one, but I didn't. Including a hand mirror for a very vain hobbit, and infamously the spoons for the Sackville Baggins for their very own, since they stole from him. So on that note, we have written some notes and gifts to give to other characters. And I'm going to lead off here. In the same vein as the spoons for Sackville Baggins, I figured that he would also give a spoon to Grima Wormtongue to match his tongue, as in keep your forked tongue behind your teeth. So now he has both a fork and a spoon. What's your first one, Eden?
Mine were more like thank you notes.
Yes, Eden's on the passive aggressive or not so passive aggressive thank you notes train.
Some of these are very nice.
Mine are not.
This one, I decided to have a note to Elrond, since he's met Elrond a couple times. To Elrond, my dear friend, thank you for letting me and any of my traveling companions stay in your home. I apologize for my companions the first time we stayed, but they did say they enjoyed it when we ended up in their next place to rest. I'm glad you allowed me to stay, even though you were busy with something else, and I'm glad you showed Frodo the same hospitality.
And I'm sure Elrond, somewhere deep in his soul, appreciates it, even if not always outwardly. The last homely house and all. Alright, my next one is a ball of twine for Barlum and Butterbur to organize his affairs, as in, he's the forgetful type who probably needs to tie strings to his fingers all the time to remember things. So there's another helpful gift from Bilbo. What's your next one?
My next one is a note to another elf. You didn't exactly stay with him. I mean, the dwarves technically stayed, but that was because they were in prison. To the King of the Wood Elves, thank you for your hospitality. I know we didn't get the party invitation, but thank you for letting us stay anyway. The rooms maybe needed some more decoration, but the farewell party was great, if a little crowded. I will also let you know that the abode you redirected us to stay in was very great.
Yes, Thranduil was maybe a slightly less welcoming host, as elvish kings go, but, you know, he didn't really have a choice in the matter. Speaking of invitations, my next one, I asked a friend to provide me with a random Lord of the Rings character, and she suggested Forlong the Fat, who is a fantastic Gondorian, we'll say, character, who is fat, as implied. And I'd feel like that Bilbo would just straight up send Forlong an invitation to his birthday party, because I'm pretty sure Forlong could party with the hobbits.
Yeah.
All right, what's your next one?
My next one is a note to Beorn, my favorite character, for letting them stay in his house. Beorn, thank you for your hospitality. Your house was great and the other residents were lovely. I apologize for the entrance we made, but I'm so glad it didn't off-put you. Thank you also for your help with getting us past the blocks on our trip. Your way with animals is truly astounding.
What a nice little note. Bilbo would be the type to just send thank you notes all the way across Middle-earth for all of his adventures that he had in the Hobbit. I accept that as canon now. All right, my next one, as I got more and more obscure with characters, is a beach towel and an umbrella for the Blue Wizards, hoping they're having a lovely vacation, since we all know they had nothing to do with the main plot of The Lord of the Rings. That might be the most passive-aggressive.
Yeah. My last note is to Treebeard.
Yeah?
To the end, Treebeard. My cousin, Paragon Took, told me about the misunderstanding you had with him and Maradoc, and I understand how one could easily misidentify. I want to thank you for helping them with the task at hand. It made a bit of a mess, but I don't think the resident at that area was too upset.
That's true. little shade at Thurman.
What
Jade.
And my last one was just because I wanted a Silmarillion character, and I decided that I think Bilbo would give Juan the Hound treats because Juan is a good boy, and Juan just needs dog treats.
All right. So anyway, one of the first foods that comes up in Lord of the Rings is the Hobbit's love of mushrooms. Well, of course, there's the party, and it's snowed food and rain drink, and that's great. But, you know, the mushrooms, I am one of those people that I always wanted to like mushrooms because the hobbits like mushrooms, and they make them sound so good in the Farmer Maggot scene where, like, Frodo opens up the picnic basket, and there's these roasted mushrooms, and he's just so happy, and they smell so great, and I always wanted to like them. I think like the first meal that Chelsea cooked for me when we were dating, she made like these big portobello mushrooms and roasted them up and everything. And at all moments in my life, I would have felt like that was the one that I would have liked the mushrooms, and I don't. Now Chelsea will go out of her way to cut up mushrooms and put them in my food, and I don't often notice. So I've discovered that I don't necessarily dislike the taste of mushrooms so much as the texture. Although if I ever
I support
the taste,
that.
Not...
Oh my gosh.
As resident picky eater, I support that.
It's true. I'm sorry, I was just eating mushrooms this week and I was like, I love the texture of mushrooms. It's like eating a pillow, you know, you just kinda eat it and it squishes in your teeth and I'm like, it tastes so good.
The resident picky eater say no.
Thank you, Eden. But no, I was thinking most of these siblings here would hate mushrooms, but Noelle and I like them a lot. This is for me.
I actually haven't had one.
You like them, Sonora?
I haven't tried them, so I can't say I don't like
them. Hey, as resident pickiest eater here, I have also convinced myself to like mushrooms because of the Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, but I was gonna say I just like the flavor. It's so earthy. It's kind of like eating dirt, but in like a good way.
That's true. Maybe that's why I like the Hobbit.
Anyway,
I feel like it must be
a good way to eat dirt.
Speaking of eating dirt and having to make your food along the way out in the middle of nowhere, one of our favorite chapters that we discussed having to do with food is, of course, Of Herbs and Stewed Rabbit. Honestly, a lot of us, I think, almost brought this up for a favorite chapter in general. It's definitely my second or third favorite chapter. Mainly for the dialogue, but certainly there's a lot to discuss as far as food is concerned. Quincy, I know you had some thoughts on that.
Well, I was just briefly going to note that this past week I was listening to the chapter, and I was reminded of my numerous struggles to get my toddler to eat as I heard Sam talking to Gollum about what he should like to eat. And he's like, potatoes. And Gollum's like, nasty tater. Damn. He's like, stewed rabbit. He's like, no, give it to me raw. And that's what I'm reminded of in trying to feed my son, who, you know, you'll be like, you know, Chelsea or I'll make something nice for him, like, oh, these stewed carrots and potatoes. And he's like, yeah. But if he goes outside, he'll eat a stick of dirt.
He just wants mushrooms, Quincy. He's a hobbit.
And we're back on eating dirt.
I guarantee he won't eat mushrooms. He doesn't like vegetables. But yeah, if it was raw, I don't know. No, it's hard to tell, though. Like, if he had a raw and wriggling rabbit, he'd eat it. Maybe. I don't know. But anyway. I'm sympathetic for poor Sam, who's like trying to help Gollum understand what's good, and Gollum's just like being a toddler.
Yeah.
I love my favorite part. One of my favorite things from the movie is how that sort of became a meme because I love that chapter so much, and then everybody's like, potatoes is like everywhere now. And shout out to Sean Austin for making that awesome.
Yeah.
They did great in that scene.
It was also always my favorite scene in the radio drama. The long one with Ian Holm was always the Of Herbs and Stewed Rabbit.
Oh, because yeah, the Gollum and Sam actors are amazing. So yeah, they really do that scene really, really well.
I don't know. Sonora, would you eat a rabbit?
No. It reminded me of my own rabbit, and I feel kind of bad.
Yeah, no, I honestly...
It's like chicken.
I love rabbits, like, as animals. I've had rabbits in my life, so yeah, I could not bring myself to eat rabbits.
Am I supposed to be grabbing something from these various expressions that are being made on camera?
No.
You can edit that out later. And speaking of being on camera and Zoom, is it like I have a black eye?
No. What happened?
Is it your right eye? Really, is it your right eye?
Yeah. Augie gave it to me.
Already?
My youngest son, who's going to be 8 months old here, he has this bad habit of throwing himself backwards, as Micaiah, I'm sure, can tell you from small children will do sometimes. And I had him in bed. I was lifting him up. He just threw his head back and gave me a black eye. So my moral to that and the connection here is hobbits give you hope, but also black eyes.
Don't underestimate the children or the
others. Don't underestimate the hobbits. I know that we could probably have a whole podcast about the 1978 animated Lord of the Rings, but can we all agree that the number one thing, question lingering from watching that movie, is why the heck does Aragorn not have pants on?
Yeah, the Aragorn's miniskirt was exactly what I was going to bring up too.
You mean the short shorts that horrified us as a kid?
the guy is spending his whole life in the woods, living off the land, and he doesn't have a pair of pants.
No, that's what's left of his pair of pants. He had a pair of pants.
He had pants at one point.
Rocking the Robin look from the Batman series in the 60s.
Robin pulled it off a lot better, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Aragorn's 87 years old.
Oh, boy.
We
should know
that. All right.
Donald ducking it through the whole movie.
Well said.
This episode is going to be called Aragorn's Pants, episode 7.
Donald ducking it, that's definitely a good verb for it.
I was going to ask, because I mentioned earlier, can you do any impressions of any Lord of the Rings characters?
Yeah, we may have heard something about that.
We may have heard something about it.
Okay, my favorite one to freak my wife out with, if I'm sitting holding my son and cuddling with him up to... Sit there and hold him, screaming, Malpassus.
That's great.
If she's cooking dinner, I'll come up behind her, what's in the pot, Malpassus?
Good, you caught on.
Yeah.
Maybe I should pick up this habit.
Liz might do it back, though.
Yeah, Liz would do
this. This is great, Kitty. Okay, do you have any others in your repertoire besides Gollum, which is a good Gollum?
Bilbo Baggins. I gotta do a little more but attitude than that. Bilbo Baggins, do not take me for some cheap conjurer of cheap magic. I'm not trying to rob you. I'm trying to help you.
All right.
Weston, this is your show. I mean, you're the seven siblings. I'm at best just the one white tree. So.
He is tall. He is white. So that kind of works.
We'll put you on the logo.
Yeah. Oh, we'll change.
That's going to be the thumbnail for when we share this podcast.
Beat up your standards. No, you don't want me as a logo, but.
I wrote a poem about my reaction to the book. My favorite place to read was Long Branch of a Tree, having no other great need than to let my mind wander free. Great adventures I lived through as the summer days would fade, always craving something new, a deep need in my heart lay. To be fully satisfied when the story had been told, no matter what books I tried, I was never really sold. Something would be incomplete in plot, people, place, or mood, even among the elite, as the authors had been viewed. Until I finished this book, my heart hurt but very full. My eyes watered, my hands shook, my satisfaction was whole. I have finished many tales since, oftentimes took great pleasure, but nothing would convince it was a greater treasure than Tolkien's wonderful tale of friendship, courage, and loss. Against it all others pale, that I would ever come across.
Yeah, so Eden created this script. Eden's a very big script writer. I edited it for her and added some things and fixed her spelling of Gandalf.
The weird thing is I know, and for some reason I accidentally put an A in it. And the funny thing is I had the book right in front of me.
She put an O where the A should be.
It's a schwa sound. They all found the same. It can't be any vowel.
Gandalf
Gandalf.
Was it Gandalf or
Gandalf?
Gandalf.
I don't know. I had the book in front of me and did not notice what I did.
I think Gandalf is probably the most common misspelling.
Yeah, that's
it. Falls down like you bridge kind of zoom. It's like I'm Gandalf. I'm Gandalf.
Yes. So this script is put in the perspective of if the final battle of the Black Gate was a sports event. And these are the announcers commenting on what's happening during this event. So I will attempt a British accent. I may butcher it, so forgive me.
I wasn't going to, but we practiced it earlier. I accidentally started into a British accent, so that might happen.
I don't promise nothing, but I'm going to try it. All right.
Here we are.
All right. This is ME Official Sports. Welcome to Middle Earth Official Sports. Have we got a battle for you?
That's right, folks. It's finally happening. After days of travel, the team has finally reached the Black Gate. From what I'm hearing, we're gonna see some action soon.
Looks as though some messenger from Team Mordor is talking to Aragorn and Gandalf. Whoa, that dude needs some dental work. Well, it appears that he tried to make them surrender, and Gandalf did not like that. There will be no surrender from their team.
And the opposing team did not like that. The messenger of Dantos is gone. The trumpets have sounded. Mordor start bringing their team in.
Some of our home team looks pretty nervous, but Aragorn is giving them some last-minute coaching, and it really helped. The team is ready. Both sides start rushing towards each other. The battle has begun!
Before we get back to that, let's check on our home team members in the opposing field. I'm getting word that Sam and Frodo are on their way up. Mount Doon, under the noses of the enemy. If they continue this way, we could be in for a quick win.
Back to the action. Mordor's team has an okay strategy, but the home team seems to have some more skilled fighters. Legolas and Gimli alone are making up for more of the fighting than some of Mordor's players. Ooh, that looked like it hurt. Watch out!
This has been going on for quite a while. But, folks, both teams at each other's throats, but if nothing changes, this could be bad for the home team.
Wait, I'm getting word that Frodo and Sam have made it into Mount Doom. They have the ring in position. This could be it.
Wait, I'm getting something. Oh no, Frodo didn't throw the ring in. The battle's still on. The teams are neck and neck. This could be bad.
Wait,
Gollum intercepted. The ring is near the edge.
Who could believe it? The most unexpected player. Gollum fell in and destroyed the ring!
And on the battlefield, another team has joined! The Eagles are coming! The Eagles are coming! The battle's over! Mordor loses! Victory for Rohan! Victory for Gondor! Victory for Middle-earth!
Yeah! Oh, the dog liked it too! Well, that's it, folks! Tune in next time when we recap the most classic game we've ever played, the Battle of the Five Armies! Until next time!
I'm excited about the medium because we haven't had a lot of stuff adapted as animated recently for Tolkien. And I mean, I really like the animated Hobbit. I also have a soft spot for animated Return of the King, even though I know it's weird. And I don't like the animated Lord of the Rings, but I don't think that was because it was animated. I think it was just because it was animated badly.
And Aragorn's pants.
Yeah, that was
lack part of the
end. It's Amazon. They can afford pants this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Seven Stars, Seven Siblings, and One White Tree, a Tolkien podcast by the Wheeler family. This episode was produced by Quincy, Nadia, and Elizabeth, and was edited by Micaiah. Our associate producers are Noelle, Sonora, and Eden, and our Tom Bombadil-esque enigma is Micaiah. This week's music was from freepd.com. Check them out. If you like this episode, please tell your friends, rate, review, and come back next time. And thank you for your support. This has been an Unwashed Bear production.